Pam is going to tell us about his Al-Anon story. Dave's been around for quite a few years, and I think he's got a pretty powerful story. No pressure, Dave. I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Jim. My name's Dave Miller. And I am a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hey, Dave.
Thanks. I can't believe I actually said that. There was a time when people would get up at the podium and share and say, I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and the skin would, my hair would stand up on my arms. And I said, how could you be, thank you, somebody that relates. And it's kind of funny. A couple of housekeeping items before I get going. I wanted to share a text. Brendan got a text from his wife before he shared, and I got one too. And this will give you a little insight into the type of character you're dealing with here. I want you to listen, and I want you to listen to what my wife says and imagine what I remember out of the whole text. And she says, hey, Dave, have a great time. I know you will be well received. Just remember, you're not that funny. I hope you enjoy yourself. I hope you enjoy yourself and a nice break from the humdrum of home. There's a lot of nice words in there. But what do I remember? You're not that funny. You're not that funny. And I'm going to tell her I got a laugh out of that and told the story. You know what I really should have heard, right? Have a great time. I have, by the way, thanks to this group. I've had a great time. You will be well received. I've felt very, very welcomed here. And it's kind of cool because for an Al-Anon coming to an AA event, it's always like Daniel going into the lion's den for me. And I'm always amazed when I actually show up that it's not really what I thought it was going to be. And I want to thank the group for that. I do hope you enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself. Nice break. I've done that too. It's been really insightful for me. And yet, you know what? You're not that funny. You're not that funny. That was what I read. And you know, one of the problems I have, and I have it to this day, is my wife loves me. It's just not the way I want to be loved. And that causes me some real angst from day to day. And that's one of the reasons why I'm grateful to be in Al-Anon. Because I've learned some skills that allow me to deal with that fact and still have a decent life. I got up this morning and I thought of a guy that was in my life and he passed away, and I just want to have a moment of silence for him. His name was Massey, and he was a real Al-Anon guy. And the reason I thought about him this morning is Massey was one of these guys. I always knew where I was going to see him. He turned up at events. You could always see him, and he's missed. And, you know, where does he fit in my story and Al-Anon? Well, there was one night and where things were not going well at home, and my daughter and I needed to escape. And because I was already in Al-Anon at that point in time, I actually had a printed meeting schedule. And so we looked down, and I live in Renton, and there was this meeting in Valley Medical Center. I go, that's kind of weird. And so Krista and I, we need to get out of Dodge as quickly as we can. And so we go to this meeting, and we walk in this room, and there's a guy sitting there. One person. And it's Massey. And he welcomes us, and he's got a bunch of literature out there. And he really made Krista and I feel at home. And we told him we needed a place to hide out for a little bit until things calmed down. And so we sat there, and as in Al-Anon meetings, we share back and forth. And I asked him, I said, how often do you do this? And he said, every week. I said, do this many people normally come? Yeah, one or two. I said, what do you do with the rest of the hour and a half? Well, I sit here and read literature and meditate, and I'm going like, man, this guy has some real problems. He does. And he did this for years. And you talk about service without expectation. That was kind of huge. So I just wanted to take 30 seconds, I should say, and just think about him. And if you didn't know Massey, do you know somebody that really inspired you that you miss now, and we'll just, so. Rest in peace, my brother. You were well loved. Okay, I always like to, I gotta take a couple more shots before I get started here. If you like how I look, blame Gordy and Brad, and my sponsor, and my wife also. Brad said I'm being recorded, so he encouraged me to change the order just in case she ever hears the tape, so I had to mention that too. The good news is, thanks to Al-Anon, regardless of what I wear or where I go, I am me, I have enough, and I am enough. And that was not always my story. So I want to start out, when I get a chance to speak to people, I talk about gratitude. If it wasn't for Al-Anon, this good-looking guy with a shirt and tie on is not here. I would not have made it. I would not have survived. Dealing with alcoholism for most of my life was more than I could deal with, and I was very alone and very isolated. And you know, when I sit here, I'll have been in Al-Anon 25 years this November, which is really cool. I'm almost married 30 years. I have 3 grandkids. They're the love of my life now. I have a daughter stepdaughter that gets up, and every time I talk to her, tells me she loves me. And hopefully I'll remember to talk a little bit about how that happened, because that's another Al-Anon miracle. And I have a lot of friends in the program. And they're real friends, because when they don't like something I'm doing, or they think there might be a different way, they're quite willing to tell me. They're quite willing to tell me, which I've learned to appreciate after I go to the den and think about it. And yeah, there is some truth there. There is some truth there. Okay, so I forgot. Every once in a while, I have a little burst of serenity. You know, this actually works if I just show up and do the work. So how the hell, I always have to know, how the hell does somebody like me end up here? And I'm going to tell you. You don't often get 85 minutes to talk, but I guess I'll take advantage of all 85 minutes. It's okay, I'm just kidding. Jim's having a heart attack here. Don't go there, Jim, it's okay. Oh my God, the guy with the sign. Mike, thank you very much. I love it. So anyhow, a long time ago, I was born in a little fishing village of Steveston, British Columbia, up in Canada. And I grew up in an era where you were kids, we got kicked out of the house, we could run all over the little city, and it didn't matter. And that world doesn't exist anymore. And so we were like free-range chicken running all around. And as long as we got home on time, and my mom had a whistle, and she'd blow the whistle, and we'd have to come charging home for lunch or whatever it was. But there was noise in our house. And when you're a kid, you don't get it. You just know there's noise in the house. And there was a lot of yelling and screaming that went on, and usually between my mom and my dad, not always caused by us. And so we didn't realize what was going on. And my dad, back in the day, they didn't have full-time fire departments. They were all volunteers. And my dad was a volunteer fireman. And it seemed like they had a lot of fires in Steveston. You know, when I grew up and got old, I realized what was going on, right? So my brother and I, one day, we get invited to go to the fire hall, and we're all excited and everything, and we're wandering around, and God, this is exciting stuff. And we go into the fireman's room, and there's a pool table in there and a card table and a fridge, and both my brother and I have the same thought. Good, we're gonna get we call it pop in Canada, soda to you guys, so you know what we're talking about here. We're gonna get a soda. So I go over and open the fridge, it's full of beer. And when I look back at what was going, the guys would take turns going to the fire department, ringing the fire siren, And they would all go and party and come home, and then we'd have a lot of noise at our house. A lot of noise. And so this went on for a while, and obviously my mother, who was quite a free spirit, didn't think this was an appropriate way for a father to behave. And eventually we got to move. And so this is around, I want to say 1960 or something like that. And you just don't move from one house in a little town to another house in a little town with a different guy. And it's just not done. No, we did it. And of course, my mom thought everything was going to be different. She's a really neat gal. Couldn't pick men for shit, got to tell you. She loved alcoholics, and so she picked another one. And so we move in with this guy, and he's not an everyday drinker. He's not a volunteer. He's a carpenter. But he's one of those guys that once a week he goes drinking after work. And unfortunately for us, he's not a happy drunk. Normally, he's an okay guy, and I've known a couple of those unfortunates in my life, and you get him on hard liquor, look out, you need to hide. And so we learned to hide. And around our house, and I don't know about you guys, when we were kids, report card day was an important day. And there were very definitely winners and losers in the house. And the good news for me was I was a winner. I went to school. I did what I was supposed to do. I got decent marks. My brother, no, he is funny. My brother is funny. But he sucks at school. And so report card day at our house was a horrible day. One of us was okay. The other one got yelled at. And this went on and on and on. One day, it happened, and I don't know how old I was. It doesn't really matter, but I told my stepdad if he kept picking on my brother, I would kill him. And of course, I can't kill him. I'm a kid. I can't kill anybody. But you know what? 6 months later, we lived somewhere else. We were not there anymore. And you know my takeaway was? I can make shit happen. I can really make shit happen. And if you just do what I tell you, when I tell you, and how I tell you, everything's going to be okay. And it became a curse of my life going forward. You know, my whole family has been alcoholics. And back when I was a kid, everybody drank, everybody smoked. That's just what you did. There was no other way to behave. That was just life. My cousins were all alcoholics. They were all fishermen. Three of them swim with the fishes. It appears that drinking and running a fishing boat are not compatible ideas. rest in peace. And so I just thought all that was normal. So, you know, I go to school. School's a bunch of successes and failures, mainly related to women. Like my mom, I can't seem to pick them either. I like the broken ones, just so you know, because they will, I can fix them, and they will love me for my goodnessness that I have that I want to share with them. And it just never worked out that way. I did sports. I was a school president. I was athlete of the year 1 year, which is all kind of good stuff. But I never got away from this feeling of this need to be in control of things. And you know, I went to university for a couple of years, and my girlfriend dumped me, and she created a university dropout, and I went to the pool hall and did this and that, and then I fell in love with this beautiful young girl that was too young to be loved, and that caused a whole bunch of trouble. Eventually, and she had another problem. She wasn't broken. I couldn't fix her, and I couldn't deal with that, because part of my self-worth comes from helping you. If I do something for you, you will like me. And one of the character defects that turned up in my fourth step was I'm a people pleaser. And it's a problem. It makes me do the right thing for the wrong reason on a regular basis. And it creates that expectation that if I do something for you, you'll do something for me. And when it doesn't happen, I'm immediately into resentment mode. So anyhow, I marry this gal because she's nicely broken, and I'm going to fix her. We stay together for 23 years. The marriage doesn't really work at all. We have a daughter who is the reason I think we were meant to be put together. She has a whole set of problems. I'll talk a little bit about her later too also. And we stayed together, and it's funny how I think really affects how I behave. And I had this idea that as crappy as my marriage was, my daughter needed two parents. That's not a true statement. I found that's not a true statement. That's what I believed, and that's how I behaved because that was what I believed in. She needed two parents that loved each other and created a nice home environment that was worth living in. And we did not provide that. So it was a struggle, and she drank every night, passed out, went to bed, and I didn't really think anything about it because I didn't know about alcoholism, even though I've been surrounded in it. As you can obviously tell, I've been covered in this shit, and I don't even know what's going on. I'm like the fish in the water. It's just water around me, and that's normal. I don't get any help. I get up, I go to work every day. I'm very successful at work. I'm one of these people that's really lucky because when I go out the door, the garage door goes down and I leave it behind. I don't think about it until I get in the car on the way home. And then the anxiety goes back up again. So anyhow, we move from Richmond out to Surrey. And we have this real estate agent that helps us. And she sells our house in Richmond, and she helps us get a place out in Langley, which is really cool. One day, marriage is still crappy. Life is really tough. I'm really frustrated. And my real estate agent comes out. God, she's beautiful. And she walked into the living room, and I'm sitting there with her daughter. And she wasn't my real estate agent anymore. She was beautiful. She was smoking hot, and I just could not get enough of her. My God, I still can't. And that's part of the rest of the story, but I still can't. So this is fine. So we create a mess. You know, we're both married. We used to sit in this bar in Richmond and watch people around, and we'd hold hands because we were really smoochy-coochy then. And you know what our favorite line was, right? They think we're married, and we are, but not to each other. But we're not married to each other, hell no. So we really, you know, and when I look back, I have real regrets over how the both of us handled that because we were very disrespectful to our partners. But man, we were crazy in love. It was exciting as hell. And I had worried about getting assassinated and all kinds of thoughts went through my head, but it didn't stop me one bit. I really deserve to be here for a whole pile of reasons. It was just gung ho. We're in all the way. And eventually we finish breaking up both marriages and move in together. And I should have known, you know, my sponsor always talks about green flags and red flags. And in his world, red flags mean you stop, right? And green means it's okay to go ahead. And if I look back now, there were red flags all over the place. I didn't give a shit. They were all green to me. And so we just piled ahead. And I should have known I was in trouble one day when we're sitting at our new house and she's writing checks. And I go, what are you doing? She says, what do you mean, what am I doing? I said, what are you doing? She says, I'm writing checks. Can't you see that? And I said, but you're not recording them anywhere. You're not keeping track of anything. And there are a whole bunch of those things that should have just been bang. You are very different people. You are very different people. None of you guys do that, do you? You don't write checks and not keep track of where the hell you're writing them? Oh no, Gary. Sorry, Gary. Anyhow, I'm one of those people that I know where every every nickel and dime is. And so I have this wife that sits there, this gal I love so much, and she doesn't keep track of anything. And her belief is, man, there's money in the bank. Holy shit. I thought, this may not be good, but it didn't stop me. I carried on. And we had a bunch of troubles. And so I get this opportunity to move to America. God, what could be better than that? I'm going to move to the greatest country on earth. Everything is going to be better. Everything is going to be better. So we pack up our stuff and we split up Bev's two kids. Mine was 22 at the time the divorce happened. And so I thought she was okay to be on her own. And that's a miss on my part, because she was not okay. She was not okay with anything that was going on. And Robert and Bev had two kids. And the boy stayed with Robert, and Krista came with Bev and I to the States. And, you know, we got a nice house, we got a new job, and I'm just thinking, oh, this is really going to be awesome down here. It doesn't get much better than this. And it was no different than when we lived in Richmond. It was exactly the same. And the only difference was I expected it to be different. I had expectations. And so I was relentless in pursuit of having something better. I was a pain in the ass, to put it bluntly. I was just all over her, and I couldn't figure it out. And, you know, I moved, and I took her out of her environment. I had a job to go to every day, so I had something to do. I had people in contact, and she sort of isolated and stayed home a lot, and this is really not good for someone that likes to drink. And so I just, you know, the accelerator's always to the floor. We can never lift. We're always going forward. And I started to lose her. And she started to disappear. And it was funny because I still don't get what's going on. I don't get what the problem is. And one day, and I'll remember it forever, I knew what the problem was. Was alcohol. And so being the good Al-Anon in the wild that I am, I immediately go through the house. I find every stick of booze, and we had lots of booze in the house. I find every stick of booze and I pour it all out. And it's my lucky day, because the next day is trash day, or as we'd call it, garbage day in Canada. So I go out into the neighborhood. I can't put all these bottles in mine. Somebody will know there's drinking going on, right? So I go, I'm going around the neighborhood, and the first one I go to is my next door neighbor, and I open it. Shit, it's full of rye bottles. It's like, they're all over the place. They're all screwed up. So it was kind of cool. I distributed my treasure amongst the various neighbors so that they wouldn't know we had a drinking problem going on. And I thought to myself, that's okay, that's done, we're okay. And I go off to work the next day, and I get this call from my wife, and she says, are you fucking crazy? I said, what do you mean, am I crazy? She said, you dumped out all the booze. I said, yeah, you drink too much. Oh, she said, no, you're crazy. That's your dumbest idea you've ever had yet. And the funny thing is, when I sit here and I'm up at the podium talking to you guys, you know what the reality is? I live close to a liquor store and three grocery stores. They all sell booze. She can go get booze and replace it every bloody day. But I just, and it was the beginning of what I, because I'm kind of melodramatic in a way, I called the alcohol wars. And the alcohol wars went on for over 10 years. 10 years of fighting and fussing. And it wasn't like my wife didn't try to quit. She did try and quit. She just had trouble staying quit. And, you know, we got very familiar with the rehab system. And I'd like to tell you that the fifth time was the charm. And then she relapsed again after that. And I'll tell that story a little bit later about how that worked. Because after all of the things I did to help her quit drinking, when she finally did quit drinking, it had nothing to do with me. Not a damn thing. Nothing. Pissed me off, but it was good. So, anyhow, life goes on at home. Krista and her mother have probably at that point what I would call the most toxic relationship I could believe possible between a mother and a daughter. And I just couldn't believe it. It was love, hate, and I tried to fix it. I was determined that, because this is not a way a mother and a daughter should behave. They would fight with each other and it would get physical at times. And, you know, I can't deal with that. I'm not a, you want to have a fight with somebody, you can't pick me. I'm not going to fight. And I don't like it. I'm really uncomfortable around violent people and stuff like that. And so we send Krista to counseling, and Bev goes and does a bit of counseling, and all of this stuff goes on. And I get a chance. Krista goes to a counselor. And I hate the counseling system down here. You know why? Because you pay big bucks and you can't find out what's really going on. You just can't do it. And so I get in a big scrum with the counselor. I'm paying $125 an hour and I can't know what's going on with my kid. You got to be kidding me, right? Behave really badly. And so the good news here is I decide that we need a meeting. And my wife, my daughter, and this pipsqueak counselor, right? 5 foot nothing woman. And we get together, and you gotta keep in mind, this is not my appointment. I'm along for the ride. So we get there, and I immediately open the proceedings and start explaining everything to the counselor, to my wife, kind of what needs to happen, how it needs to happen, and when it needs to happen, right? And I give her her dues. She hears me out. I should have known something was wrong then. She hears me out. And when I run out of breath finally, she looks at me and she says, "You need to go to Al-Anon." And of course, I immediately do the Al-Anon coat of arms. "What do you mean, me? You guys need to do something." And I'm not normally stuck for words, but I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And bless her, she'd obviously dealt with thugs like me before, because what she did was, she says, "Yeah, there's a meeting on Wednesday night up in Kirkland, 7:30. You need to go." And that was the end of the conversation, and I was just like stunned. They're the problem, and I need to go? I already kind of knew Al-Anon was going to do some stuff that didn't make sense to me, but I didn't really know it at that point in time, but she shut me up. And we were there for another 45 minutes, and I couldn't tell you one word that was said. Not one word. I was completely shut down. Like, I gotta go to Al-Anon? I'm the one that keeps this shit together. Why don't you get it? No, she got it all right. I was the one that didn't get it. I was the crazy one. And that sort of began my Al-Anon career. I didn't realize at a time her husband was a member of Midweek Men's in Kirkland. And it was a setup. And yeah. And in the end, I was grateful. I certainly wasn't. It took me a couple of months, because one of the things I struggle with is when I hear something that's contrary to what I believe, I have to think about it. I'm not that easy to change. Like I said, I've gone to Midweek Men's for 25 years. I'm not easy to change at all. And I need to take it away and process it. So, you know, about a month later, maybe it was 2 months, okay, it was really three, I decide that things are shitty enough at home that I'll try anything. My sponsor always tells a story. He gets these options, and one of them is Al-Anon, and he said, "Is there another option?" And I don't know whether I got that from him. No, I couldn't have. I didn't know him at that point in time. So anyhow, I turn up at this meeting, and I take my dog along because I need backup, right? This is really stressful for me. So he sits in the passenger seat with me, and we're driving along, and I am thinking, I am hoping nobody is there. I'm just hoping. You can't be there. This cannot work. And I get there, and for those of you who aren't in Al-Anon, we have some of the weirdest, grossest, ugliest signs that sit out in front of the meetings. And so I get there, and I'm just praying. Nope, there's a sign sitting out there, and they've got all these little directions. So even if I want to get lost, I cannot get lost. I got to go there. And there's this, so I pucker up my courage and like I said, I'm pretty desperate. I just really wanted to turn the car and go home, pat the dog on the head and say, hey, we're out of here. But I show up at the meeting and it was kind of an interesting dynamic. They've got all these little signs, so I go walking along and I finally get there and there's a guy standing at the door and he says, welcome. Now I'm really screwed, I can't go back. He's kind of grabbing, he tries to hug me and I go like, come on, you can't do that. You can't do that. No, you can't. And so I get into the room, there's nine guys there. And luckily for me, it was a first step meeting. And in Al-Anon, a first step meeting is sort of like our version of the drunkalogue in the AA world, where we lay all our woes on the table for each other. And so I'm sitting there, and as much as I don't want to be there, I'm starting to feel pretty good. These guys are really messed up. They are really messed up. And I heard some horror stories that I couldn't believe. And I'm sitting there whining and sniveling because I have a stay-at-home alcoholic that doesn't smash up cars, isn't a part of the court system. Just she's a stay-at-home drinker who just wants to not be engaged at times. And so I'm feeling pretty good. And I'm also feeling, I showed up very alone. Alcoholism to me, dealing with alcoholism, I was very, very isolated. And because I'm very isolated, I spend a lot of time up here. And up here I found for me is enemy territory. It is not a good place for me to be. I need to be out with you, hearing different thoughts and different ideas. So I go through all of this and I just calm right down. It's like, oh man, this is good. And we get to the end of the meeting, and this is where the horror story really starts, right? I've listened to all these sad stories and how tough life is. So the meeting's done, we finish with a serenity prayer, and they all get up and are all laughing and hugging each other, and I'm going like, what the hell? What the hell? I need to get out of here fast. This is not good. And that was the beginning of my Al-Anon career, and one of the things, I still get it, I got it here the first meeting on Friday when we got here. Just that feeling when I come into the room, the energy level just, it kind of quiets. The world goes quiet for me. And it's a safe place to be. And that really works. Am I at 30 minutes?
19, 20.
20, okay. Gotta get it. Okay. I don't want to be 85, really. I could do it if you want me to. Anyhow, so I go to meetings, and just so you know the type of person I am, I would tell anybody that would listen, the best hour and a half of my week was midweek men's. The best hour of my week. But it would never dawn to me that if one meeting was good, two might be twice as good. And three might be outstanding, but I could not go there because my brain just doesn't work that way. And so I go every week and I show up and these guys are weird. They talk about weird stuff. They don't think correctly at all. But I start realizing that I have a role in the drama that is at home. I'm very much a part of it. And I don't like it because Al-Anon tells me I have to focus on me. And I really want to focus on you. I don't want to focus on me. That's work. So, you know, one of the things both my wives had in common was they both referred to me as Mr. Perfect. And Al-Anon reduced Mr. Perfect to a shambles. My favorite word at meeting after meeting was, damn, I do that too. And so I actually got depressed after a while, because my whole life had been based around you're screwed up, and now I'm screwed up. Like, I don't like that feeling. But I kept going because, like I said, it was the best hour and a half of my life, and I got to keep going. And so I kind of wander around in the jungle, and things at home just kind of carry on, and they're not getting any better. Treatment centers come and go, and you know, we still have the problem. But I think I'm getting better, and I realized it's okay to be broken. It's okay to have problems. It's just not okay to stay there. I need to be working on myself. And so after 6 years of going to one meeting a week, I decide I need to get a sponsor. And I had this guy, and I'd been lining him up for best part of 8 months, right? I'd go to him after every meeting. I'd go, "Hey, Chuck, when am I going to be done with this?" And he'd smile at me, and he'd say, "You'll be done when you're done, and it's not today." And so after doing this for week after week after week, I finally decide that, and I can't figure out why he won't ask me. He will not ask me to be my sponsor. He will not ask me. So I set up a dinner, because I'm good at setting up, as you can tell, I'm setting up these meetings to make it happen. And we're sitting, we were in a place in, right by Factorium. And we're having dinner. And he still won't ask. We're sitting there, my hamburger's gone. I'm piddling around with the fries on there. And I finally look over and I said, "You're actually going to make me ask, aren't you?" And he said, "Yeah, I am." Yeah. You guys laugh at the funniest stuff, you know, I gotta tell you that. It was not funny at all. It pissed me off. But you know what? It opened a whole new, yeah, I did ask him. I tried every bait. All the lures were gone. I was just broken, so I had to ask him. And what he did was he introduced me to a whole new world. And life changed dramatically. I'd like to say life changed at home dramatically, but it didn't. But my life changed dramatically. I got to meet a whole bunch of other neat people. Some of them are in the room, and it was really great. And I started working the steps, and it was funny. I don't usually in my share talk much about the steps, but and for the longest time, if you'd heard me 2 years ago, I would tell you I couldn't get out of step one. For 6 years, I was stuck in step one. And about 18 months ago, I'm attending a meeting and paying attention, sort of. And I realized that my problem was never step one. I knew I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was messed up. What I did not like was the solution. And the solution is in two and three. You know, turn it over, let go, and let God, and all of that stuff. And God, that was hard for me to do. I did not like that solution. I could not go there. I had to be the answer. And so it was kind of a revelation for me, and it helped me in many ways. Okay, what else? Yeah, so step four was, thank you. Step four was a deep dive into Dave. I'd never really spent any time thinking about myself. And when I got done with step four, I had a pretty good idea why Dave did the things he did, why he was the person he was. And it was very instructive for me to know that. It was very instructive for me. And it allowed me to do some different things. It took me forever. I love my AA friends, you know, because they're really direct people relative to Al-Anons. Can be kind of, we'll not call things what they are and kind of mince around. And so I was talking about step four one night at a meeting, and this double winner comes up to me and says, "You know, Dave, it would just be easier to do it." I said, "Thanks, John, for nothing." Yeah, okay. Gotta move along here. So anyhow, I'm going through all of this. I end up working all the steps. I might add, the only reason I got around to doing the fourth step was I got fired for the first time. And if you've never been fired, it's a lot of fun. No. But, and one of the conclusions I had was, I was willing to spend a lot of time investing in you, but I wasn't prepared to spend any time investing in me. And Al-Anon sort of beat that out of me. You know, six and seven, how can you not want to be rid of all your character defects? I mean, this is so basic, and yet, you know what? It's a daily reprieve. I still, some of the things that bothered me back then, they still bother me. The only difference now is I have the tools to realize when it's happening and I can behave differently, because that's what I want to do, so I'm grateful for that. Eight, the only thing I had to say about step eight was that I make this list out and it's perfect, because I made it. I'm Dave, it's perfect. And I give it to my sponsor. List's not complete. Bullshit. It's totally complete. It's a work of art, and you need to be appreciative. And he said, "Nope, there's a name missing." And I already know where this is going, right? You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. So anyhow, I added my name because he made me. It was under duress, but I put my name on there. And the funny thing is, when I sit here and talk to you guys, if you ask me, have I made an amends to myself yet? And I'm feeling really open and honest and willing to take the abuse. No, I haven't. I have not. I've made most of my other amends. None of them turned out the way I thought they were. They were all, my first wife said, if I'd known you, we'd still be married. And I'm thinking, hell no, hell no, we wouldn't be. But yeah, so anyhow, step 10 is just for me is just daily cleanup. And what I find for me is the easiest way to do step 10 is just to live a good life and try and be kind and understanding and patient with people. And you don't have to make amends. And I wish I did it more often. I do it probably every second night. And one of my goals is to make it a daily practice, because most of the people that I really respect and admire, they make it a daily practice and it just really works for them. 11, I'm trying to meditate right now, and I'm going to Fort Worden last year, and I'm doing the exercise and it's pissing me off. So I said to my friend Victor, I'm driving along, and I said, Victor, I don't get this meditating. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, nothing's going on. And he says, you're doing well. I'm like, you're doing well. Like, what do you mean I'm doing well? Nothing is going on. Because I'm one of those bingo, bango, bongo guys. Things have to be going on. Okay. So anyhow, 12 is something I think I understand really well. Service has been a big part of my Al-Anon journey, a really big part. And I'm going to talk about it when I close, because there are some things that have really worked well for me in the program, and because I like things to be kind of organized in my own high-level way, I've developed my own system for recovery. I'm going to talk a little bit about the kids in my life. I've had a couple of surprising gifts where I have a great relationship with my stepdaughter. We used to fight like cats and dogs. She was not my kind of girl. She didn't do what I told her to do. She didn't do when I told her to do it, and she didn't do any of that. Okay, so I go to this meeting, and I don't know about your AA meetings, but I do know about Al-Anon meetings. In our particular Al-Anon meetings, we do a step, a tradition, and a topic. And so one night, the topic turns up, and it's being a good father. And I'm thinking, hallelujah, brother, you are going to hear how to do it. But the good news for me is, I don't share early in the meeting. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm going like, what the f- is going on here? I'm hearing a whole different version of parenting than I know. I'm the father knows best. Just, like I said, do what I tell you, when I tell you, and how I tell you, and it'll all be okay. And Krista did not relate to that at all. And so I'm sitting there, and one of the things we talk about is the three A's. And I suddenly become aware that there's another way to parent this kid. And I have to accept the fact that I'm not doing it. And that allowed me to get on to action. And so I changed my pattern with her. And instead of telling her what to do, I listened. Because I heard, good parents listen to their kids and they let them talk. And because they don't tell them what to do, they just sit and they kind of wait them out. So this worked really, really well. And we could sit and talk. And of course, her mother wants to direct her, and so she talks to me and not her mom, and which is really kind of cool. Not really, but it was how it worked. And so at 6 months, the acid test came. She asked me what to do on a certain subject. And I did what her counselor always did. Oh, that's a really tough problem, Krista. What do you think you should do? What are your options? Oh, I knew what she should do. But I didn't do it. I passed the test. And for that reason, I have been a resource for her almost forever. I'm somebody that, we talked about it a couple of meetings yesterday, this safety. I am safe for my stepdaughter. And that was not always the case. And if I got nothing else from Al-Anon, I got that. The other meeting I go to is my daughter has three kids. She's gone through a very difficult divorce. With a partner that has substance abuse problems. and she has a job, she has a house, and she needs help, babysitting help. So one night, and so the first summer comes up, and I get in the car with my friend, one of my friends that I ride to the meeting with, and I tell him, I'm not a babysitter, I'm a grandparent. And he says, well, what do you need to do? And I said, well, I got to do this, and this, and this, and he says, that doesn't sound that bad to me. And I go like, uh-oh, this is not a good start. So I'm not done, because I am tough. So I get to the meeting, and I share about this. And so this other guy comes up to me, and he says, Dave, I think you have the wrong pair of glasses on. And I go, what the fuck? I mean, are you kidding me? He said, no. He said, the world might look different if you put your grandfather glasses on rather than your babysitter glasses. And I literally almost made a U-turn on the spot. And I'm there for my grandkids. I show up. It's really, really important that I show up. I'm not their parent, so I don't do that role. And I would have never got that. And there are a couple of gifts from Al-Anon. You know, another one is I run a speaker meeting, right? And we get speakers showing up. And my daughter up in Canada, she's 50. She's lived with a mother that has drank for 50-odd years. And it's really a toxic relationship. And I've talked with her, and I go see her all the time. And so I want her to go to Al-Anon in the worst way. I just want her to get it. And so I'm sitting there one night at the HERE meeting, and I see this person comes in at CCM, and Candace Christina Miller. And I am so bloody excited. And I guess if you talk about it and don't promote it, and she likes what she sees in her dad, it's a good deal. And so it was kind of funny, because she comes every month now, and she says, I just come to see you. And I'm thinking, I don't care why you come. I care that you come. You know, I don't want to tell her it's good for her or anything like that. Old Dave would have done that. I'd have laid it out in detail just to make sure she knew it if she didn't. I'm just grateful she turns up. I have a stepson up in Canada, and he once told me, and I took it as an extreme compliment, he said, you're the only person, he lives with an alcoholic father. He's lived with him forever. Two separate penthouses, email back and forth, just a horrible relationship. And he said, you know, you're the only, perfect. You're the only guy, only got 20 minutes left. Jeez, nice, thanks, man. He said, you're the only person in my life that knows what really goes on with me. And I thought, it just made an old man happy. I want to be that person. I want to be that person for you. And I've learned that in relationships, sometimes one party always seems to do more work than the other, and Al-Anon's encouraged me to be that person, to reach out and do stuff like that. So I'm going to close with my five S's. And I did a lot of 5S when I was at work, and it's about organizing the workplace and all of this neat stuff. So I have five things that if I do them, I'm going to be okay. And the first S, it's really two S's, is suit up and show up. I need to go to meetings. I need to show up and hang up with the wise men of these rooms and to participate. Go to a couple meetings a week. It works. I have lots of sponsees. That works too. I'm going to talk a little bit about the second one is, not only do I have to go to meetings, I have to participate. I need to share. And there's a couple of reasons I realized that. If you want to know me and be available to me, I have to tell you about me. You will not figure it out if I just sit there in silence. And so I need to part. Not only do I need to go, I need to participate. I need to be a player. The third one, and people look at me sometimes, is get a sponsor. I need to have a sponsor. I've had the same sponsor for 17 years. His name's Chuck, and I love him to death. I'd love to tell you we agree on everything. It's not true. We don't. Of course, that doesn't stop him from trying to give me suggestions. You know what? They're all suggestions. Like I said, he opened a whole new world for me, and I'm so grateful for that, because I would have never got there otherwise. I would have never got there. I met a bunch of neat people. You know, the fourth S is work the steps. And the reason I put the sponsor in front, because if you try working the steps by yourself, my experience is not good. And you need that conscience there. And you need to go through the process. I've sort of graduated. I do a bit of the traditions now. I'm getting much better at that. And I've even thrown a couple of concepts in. I used to go to CAM on Friday night. If there was a concept meeting, I would share a meeting, another some. And yet the concepts, they're all ways to help us work in the world we're in. I get the sponsor. Well, last one, service. Service is a big deal for me. And it was kind of really neat when I came here, I realized how many people in the room were actually helping put this thing on in a variety of different ways. And it doesn't work without it. And you know, at the group level, I've done all of the positions. My tendency is to like things that don't require commitment, time commitment. Speaking is good, secretary is good. You can only do it for 3 months. I did that. I got promoted to father of Al-Anon one night, and you know the real qualification I have? I can read. This guy comes up and says, "Yeah, I thought you were the father of Al-Anon. You just sat up there with the books." And I said, "Well, I'm really honored, but it's not the way it is." I became group rep. I had to make a group amends for that. That's when you tell the group you're full of shit. They pissed me off. Nobody would volunteer. So I said, screw you. I'll do it myself. And that introduced me to what I call Big Al-Anon. Al-Anon is more than our meetings. AA is more than our meetings. There's a reason we have all the things we have. And it has nothing to do with our meetings. And yet for a lot of us, our meetings are everything. And they are. They are probably the most important thing we do. But there's a reason we have literature. There's a reason we have all the things we have. And if we don't support those, my big fear is that the 12-step programs die. And I have 3 grandkids that are going to need them. That's really important to me. And I'll do a lot of things to try and help perpetuate what we have going on here. It's changed my mind. I was a group rep. Al-Anon and on and on. I hate the assemblies, and yet you know what? We got some business done, and it was good stuff. I never liked being a treasurer. I'm a treasurer now. Again, nobody else would do it. I wonder if that means I need another group of men. Maybe we'll think about it. They get tired of hearing me tell what a crummy person I am. And yet you know what? The worst thing that happens in an Al-Anon meeting, and I hate it, keep coming back. And I go like, shut the up. Really. Anyhow, that's kind of been my journey. I really am a grateful member of Al-Anon. You know, to just finish up on service, the biggest gift I've got out of being of service is the people I get to hang out with. It's really neat. The programs have a lot of smart, bright people in them. And the good news for me is most of them don't think like me. Most of them are different, and so I have opportunities to continue growing. And if I don't, if I don't get up and go to meetings, and if I don't tell people about myself, and if I don't call my sponsor, I still call my sponsor twice a week. That's overkill, but I don't know how to tell them it's overkill, so I just keep doing it, and it's good. And work the steps. I have a whole bunch of sponsees, and it was funny because we're at one of the meetings, and the guy said, every time the phone rings, you cringe, right? And it's not just in AA. A phone call from a sponsee is definitely cringe-worthy. but I answer the phone and try and be of some service. And so although I've only worked the steps once, I can tell you I probably worked them hundreds of times with my guys. And every time it's a labor of love. And you know what? I was going to share this earlier when I heard Brendan share on Friday, I thought to myself, you know, you are a miracle. You guys are all miracles. And the only reason we get that is because we show up. We do the work. Anyhow, more than enough out of me. I'm really glad to be here. I will probably come again. AAs are not all intimidating. I'm just a pussy. So anyhow, enough. Thank you.